I have a patient, let's say her name is Amber. She's 34 years of age. She's been married for 3 years. They're in a great place in their relationship now, ready to start a family. They decided, okay, we're going to start trying. They try for the first month, nothing happened, but you know, it doesn't happen the first month. So they're still enthusiastic and keep trying. Second month, third month, she now starts to raise an eyebrow. Huh, we've been doing this 3 months, but she keeps going. She continues to try. At 6 months, she starts to get scared. She's been trying for 6 months. Nothing's happening. At 12 months, she goes into panic mode. She starts to think, is there something wrong with me? I've been trying and still not pregnant. What should I do? So if you're in that phase thinking, is there something wrong with me? I've been trying to get pregnant, but still not able to do so. When should I go see the fertility doctor? Well, I'm Doretner Hassan, a fertility specialist, and I'm here to answer your questions regarding reproductive health. And when should you go see the fertility specialist?
This podcast is meant to provide information on reproductive health. It does not establish a physician-patient relationship, and we would urge you to contact your treating provider regarding your care.
One of the most common questions I get is, when should I see a fertility specialist? Well, if you are 34 years or younger, and you've been trying for a year or longer to get pregnant, you do have the diagnosis of infertility. If you're 35 years or older, and you've been trying for 6 months or longer to get pregnant, you do have a diagnosis for infertility and should go see a fertility specialist. However, I'm here to tell you that you probably don't have to wait that long. There are lots of patients that come and see me. They just want to know where they are and just to get a good idea as to where they should be in terms of their reproductive health. There are other people that don't have to wait 6 months to a year. For example, if you've had your tubes tied or if you've had a previous vasectomy, you know you're going to need a fertility specialist helping you to get pregnant. If you have irregular cycles, meaning you do not ovulate every month, you need to see the fertility specialist from day one. If you are a member of the LGBTQIA+ community, you will need the help of a fertility specialist. So that being said, you don't have to wait 6 months to 12 months to see a fertility specialist. You can decide, I just want to do testing now just to figure out where I am and what my reproductive health is like today. So if you're struggling with infertility, who should you see to get cared for? You may be seeing ads on Facebook and Instagram saying, we can help you get pregnant naturally after age 40. Well, if there's that type of promise, I would stay away from those types of promises. You want to see a board-certified reproductive endocrinologist and infertility specialist. Let me explain how that works. I earned my medical doctorate degree. Then I did a 4 years in residency in obstetrics and gynecology. Subsequently, I did training in fellowship for reproductive endocrinology and infertility. That's where I subspecialized in infertility. Then I took many written and oral exams just to be board certified. So if you want someone to help you, please see a board certified reproductive endocrinologist and infertility specialist like myself. So you took your first step and made your first appointment with the infertility specialist. What should you expect? Well, like all new patient visits, you're going to get a long questionnaire and multiple things to fill out. You're going to spend many minutes filling out, sometimes feeling you're answering the same question 2-3 times. When you go to the fertility specialist for your new patient appointment, I would get there 15, maybe even 30 minutes earlier. There's probably still a few more pieces of paperwork you need to fill out once you get there. Bring a friend, your spouse, a partner, someone. It's always nice to have an extra pair of ears and eyes listening and asking questions. Now, be very careful with who you bring because questions like, oh, you had chlamydia in college may come up. So you want to bring someone that you trust to listen to your medical history. When you get there, you and your friend will go and see the fertility specialist. The first thing they usually do is introduce themselves and they go through that questionnaire that you fill out and just kind of clarify a few things. And then they ask you questions like, so tell me why you're here and what are you looking for? And typically, if this is your first time with a fertility specialist, they will set you up for some testing. It may seem like a lot of testing, but I promise you all of these tests are important. We look at multiple aspects of the reproductive health just to gauge why you're not getting pregnant. And these tests cannot all be done in one visit. Especially as a woman, these tests depend on where you are in your menstrual cycle. Some blood tests can be drawn that same day at the time of your new patient visit. Other blood testing may need to be done fasting. Other blood testing may need to be done on the second, third, or fourth day of your period. So let me explain what that means. The first day you get full flow is considered day one. So if you spot for a few days prior to full flow, the first day you get full flow, that day is considered day one, despite the fact that you've been spotting for a few days. But that blood work will be done on the second, third, or fourth day of your cycle. That's your female hormone levels. There are testing that's done, imaging that's done days 5 through 12 of your cycle. Your husband or partner's schedule may be different than yours, so he may be coming in separately for his semen analysis. So just so you know, there may be several visits in the testing before you get to your next appointment with your fertility specialist, where they would sit down with you and review what those tests mean. And then at that second visit, they would be able to tell you what's going on and put a treatment plan in your chart. Let's talk about eggs, quantity, and quality. So I look at multiple aspects of egg quantity and quality. The first thing I look at is your age. In theory, a younger person has good quantity quality of eggs, but someone of advancing reproductive age may not. Another aspect I look at is a test called AMH, anti-Müllerian hormone. I like this number to be about 1.5 or higher. Another blood test I look at is called FSH, follicular stimulating hormone. That's one of the hormones we draw on your blood testing on the second, third, or fourth day of your cycle. I like that number to be less than 10. Another test that I do is looking at the antral follicle count, AFC. So when you come in, we're going to do an ultrasound. And I'm just going to tell you right now, the ultrasound is done vaginally, so not abdominally. So get ready, you're getting a vaginal ultrasound. But what we're going to do is count the number of follicles we see in the left and right ovary and total them. So I like a number about 8 to 10. Then there are other aspects of your history I look at to give me an idea as to egg reserve. One includes, have you had cancer in the past? Have you been exposed to chemotherapy or radiation? Those will decrease your egg reserve. I look at your lifestyle. Are you a smoker? Tobacco usage, we see, adds 2 to 4 years to your eggs. So for example, if you're 38 years of age, your ovarian age may actually be age 42. Other habits like marijuana, excessive alcohol use, can decrease your egg reserve. Someone with previous surgeries may also have a low egg reserve. So endometriosis is an inflammatory condition that can inflame the pelvis, including the ovaries. Persons with previous surgeries to the ovaries can also have a lower egg reserve. And then we may do all this testing, and then when you finally go through the IVF, the eggs may not look as good under the microscope or may not be as good in terms of its ability to create embryos. What I'm trying to say, it's not one specific thing that tells me if someone has a good egg reserve, meaning that egg quantity quality, but it's the big picture of all those things I just mentioned that gives me an idea as to the egg quantity quality of a person. Now that we've talked about egg quantity and quality, you could have great egg quantity and quality, but not ovulate every month. So how do you know if you're ovulating? Well, one of the biggest things is, are you having regular cycles? Generally, if you're having regular cycles, you probably are ovulating every month. But you can also buy ovulation predictor kits over the counter. And these are kits you check your urine first thing in the morning, and they go from simple things like a second blue line to a blinking egg to a smiley face. These ovulation predictor kits, the fancier the ones you buy, the more money you spend, the better it is at predicting if you're ovulating or not. But these ovulation predictor kits can help you tell if you're ovulating. You can also test for certain metabolites of progesterone. So in theory, when you ovulate, your progesterone level goes up after you ovulate. There are certain tests that will test for things like pregnenadiol glucuronide. That's a test, or urinary metabolite of progesterone. And that will tell us if you recently ovulated. There are multiple kits out there right now that test for hormones like FSH, LH, progesterone, these types of hormones, and they may be able to give you an idea where you are in your cycle. What I'm trying to say is the more money you're willing to spend, there are many kits out there that can help you determine what phase you are in the cycle. We can draw a blood test for you about a week after you ovulate, and that's when we see the spike in your progesterone, and that tells us that you've ovulated the previous month. Some women, back when I started, some women used to create these calendars, and every month they will chart their basal body temperature. And in theory, the body temperature is slightly lower, and then right after they ovulate in the second phase of their cycle, their body temperature is about 1 degree higher. So there are many things you can do to check if you're ovulating, including just having your doctor do a blood test a week after you have, in theory, ovulated to check your progesterone level. Keep in mind that also means coming in another time of your cycle for another blood test, because that test can only be drawn about a week after you've ovulated. Let's talk about sperm and your partner's sperm. So the first test we do is called a semen analysis. Typically, it involves the partner giving us a semen sample in a cup. Typically, you have to be about 2 to 5 days of abstinence. If you're a male about 40 years of age or older, or you have chronic medical conditions, sometimes we do a semen analysis with DNA fragmentation index. In that instance, many times we want you to be about 2 to 3 days of abstinence just to get that test as accurate as possible. You would create the appointment first and then plan to show up for that appointment, either 2 to 3 days of abstinence if you're doing a DNA fragmentation test, or 2 to 5 days of abstinence if you're doing a routine just semen analysis. You would give us a sample in a cup. Now, sometimes you can drive in the sample, but I will tell you the best thing is probably just to produce the sample at the office. Most offices will have very nice collection rooms with videos, a private environment for you to produce your sample. That's a little bit better than bringing it from your home. If you bring it from your home, you have about 45 minutes to an hour to get it to us, and you have to keep it at body temperature on your drive over, which means don't leave it on the dashboard where it's exposed to the sun, or not right in front of the air conditioner. So it has to stay about body temperature. We always check identification when you come in. We have to know whose sperm we're receiving. And then once we have the sample, we do the analysis. Presently, most fertility clinics will use the WHO 6th edition of an analysis of semen samples, and that came out in about 2021. But what that is we look at the semen parameters. We want about 1.4 milliliters in the sample to consider it adequate for analysis. When we count the sperm, the concentration of the sperm, a nice number would be 16 million sperm per milliliter of sample. Motility, which describes how fast the sperm swims. And remember, the sperm has to swim to get to the egg. So motility, we're looking for a number of about 42% or higher. And then morphology describes the shape of the sperm. And shape dictates how well the sperm can fertilize the egg. We're looking for a Krüger strict morphology of about 4% or higher. Now, if you are a person who is 40 years of age or older, or you have chronic medical conditions, once we've processed the sperm sample for the semen analysis, we're going to send it out for a DNA fragmentation index. In the sperm head is the DNA of the sperm, and the more intact the sperm DNA is, the better the DNA of the sperm. If the sperm DNA is fragmented, usually indicates to us that the DNA is not as good in the sperm. In those situations, many times we will recommend lifestyle changes, vitamins, shorter abstinence period for when you're going to give us a sample for the actual treatment. In more severe cases, we may even want a urologist to do a TESI. So TESI is testicular sperm extraction, where the urologist goes directly to the testicle and get the sperm that we're going to use for creating embryos. And so we have to go directly to the factory this time to get the sperm to avoid the sperm being exposed to oxidation and therefore decreasing the chances of DNA fragmentation in the sperm. So I've given you lots of medical jargon. Just bear with me. There's a little bit more in terms of testing. We've talked about the first category, eggs, quantity, quality, as well as ovulation. The second category, sperm. Now we're going to talk about reproductive tract. So I have my book here, the Fertility Manual, and in the book, there is a nice diagram of the uterus and the fallopian tubes. In theory, sperm is deposited in the vagina during intercourse, and it swims through the cervical mucus all the way up into the uterus, all the way into the fallopian tubes, encounters the egg, and then it's fertilized, and then it moves back down towards the uterus and implants, and that's how a baby grows in the uterus. So we need to know that this is working. There are about three tests that we do to look at the reproductive tract. And depending on which fertility clinic you go to, they may do one or maybe even all three of these testing. So let's talk about the reproductive tract. The first test we do is called the HSG, histosalpingogram. That's a dye test where we see if the fallopian tubes are open. We do this under X-ray guidance. So it's a speculum exam done in the clinic, speculum placed into the vagina, and we insert a catheter into the uterus. We then inject dye through that catheter. What we're looking to see is that the dye goes into the uterus, and then in theory, hopefully, goes into both fallopian tubes and spills from both fallopian tubes. That test tells us that the fallopian tubes are open and also gives us an idea as to generalized uterine contour. The second test is called a saline infusion sonogram, sometimes also called a sonohistogram or histosonogram. That is a vaginal ultrasound, but as we're doing the ultrasound, same thing, we're going to be injecting. So we can inject saline into the uterus and see the uterine cavity. Now, I like to do this saline infusion sonogram using a three-dimensional probe. That gives me a better idea as to the uterus, but I can see polyps. Polyps are benign, meaning non-cancerous growths within the uterus. And sometimes those can be removed prior to getting pregnant. Now, keep in mind, polyps are incredibly common. The small ones don't really affect pregnancy. It's only as they get larger is when it becomes more important. On the saline infusion sonogram, we can also see fibroids. Fibroids are benign, meaning non-cancerous growths in the uterus. Fibroids within the cavity definitely need to be removed prior to pregnancy. Fibroids within the wall of the cavity, depending on the size, may need to be removed prior to pregnancy. Fibroids outside or dangling outside the uterus, just attached to the uterus, but more so outside the uterus, we call those subserosal or sometimes pedunculated. Those generally don't need to be removed prior to pregnancy. But fibroids and polyps are two things we can see on the saline infusion sonogram. In both the HSG and saline infusion sonogram, we can see scar tissue within the uterus. Sometimes you can have scar tissue within the uterus from previous surgical procedures, and we can see those very clearly on those two procedures. On both procedures, we can see things like Müllerian anomalies. So let's talk about what that means. Müllerian anomalies, when we were growing within our mother's tummy or within our mother's uterus, in those 9 months of gestation, all of our organs were being formed, including our uterus and fallopian tubes. So actually what happens is the uterus and fallopian tube starts off as two separate horns. The two horns meet and fuse, and then the middle part of that recanalizes or reabsorbs. And so it pops open like this, and that's how we get the cavity where the, or called the uterus, where an embryo would implant and grow. While there are multiple things that can go wrong during that time frame, either with the fusion or the recanalization, and that's called a Müllerian anomaly, and you could potentially detect those tests, those abnormalities on the HSG and saline infusion sonogram. Sometimes on the saline infusion sonogram, you can use saline. There are other types of contrast that are present today that you can inject at the time of the saline infusion sonogram that may be able to tell you if one or both tubes are open. Now, this takes a little bit of work and time to find these, but you can avoid doing the HSG if you had this special contrast. Keep in mind, these tests are a little bit more expensive because the special contrast costs more. So depending on what your doctor prefers, they may or may not do one or both testing. The third test that your doctor may do to look at the reproductive tract is a hysteroscopy. So that involves putting a small telescope called a hysteroscope into the uterus and looking for those abnormalities we just talked about. Now, the hysteroscopy can be done in the office, and that's usually a diagnostic hysteroscopy. It could also be done in a surgical procedure room under anesthesia, and that's an operative hysteroscopy where we can fix things like the polyps or the fibroids or the scar tissue. Now, all three tests, the HSG, the saline infusion sonogram, and the hysteroscopy, generally we like to do those testing somewhere between days 5 through 12 of your cycle. So ideally, after you're done bleeding, but before you get to ovulation day. Or if you're in birth control pills, it's a little bit easier as well in terms of scheduling those procedures. One of the biggest questions I get is, are these procedures painful? And these procedures do cause cramping. So I tell my patients, take Motrin, Advil, Tylenol, Aleve, something about a couple hours prior. Some patients, we may have to give a Valium or some type of pill that helps them relax some more prior to these procedures. Some offices offer nitrous oxide, which is a gas you would inhale that would make you more relaxed during these procedures. So yes, these procedures are a bit crampy, so take some pain medicine ahead of time. And many times as well, fertility clinics may have you take a course of antibiotics around the time you do these procedures, and that's just to prevent infections that may be associated with these procedures. Now that we've talked about eggs, sperm, and reproductive tract, we're going to talk about the fourth category, the other category. There are certain things that can affect your reproductive tract or your reproductive system. One of those is thyroid. Thyroid is a homeostatic hormone, meaning it regulates many aspects of our health. It regulates whether we're warm or cold, whether we gain weight or lose weight, whether we're sleepy or alert. Thyroid can affect all those things, including our reproductive system. So your reproductive specialist or your fertility specialist will check your thyroid. Now, we like a thyroid-stimulating hormone, a TSH, to be just under 2.5. If we see your thyroid is abnormal, one of the most common things we see is hypothyroidism. So hypothyroidism means a low thyroid. We may give you thyroid supplementation by having you take a prescription medicine to improve your thyroid. If we see hyperthyroid, many times we'll have you go see a medical endocrinologist just to get that straightened out first before starting fertility treatments, because the thyroid can influence how successful your fertility treatments will be. So when we first started off, we talked about, is there something wrong with me? You've been trying for forever, it seems like, to get pregnant and still not pregnant. What is wrong with you? I'm here to tell you there's nothing wrong with you. 1 in 6 people today cannot get pregnant and need help. And so it's really important that you came and did this fertility testing and that you return for the next visit just to find out what the results mean and what your options are. And I will tell you, many people need treatment to have a child today. So there's nothing wrong with you for asking for help for your fertility. And there's no harm in doing testing and getting some answers. There's no shame in this. So there's nothing wrong with you. Do the testing, learn what your testing results are, and then find out what treatment options are available to you. Because if you look around, there are many other people just like you who cannot have a baby and will benefit from fertility treatment. Before we end this episode, I want to answer one of those old wives' tales. My friends tell me if I just relax, I will have a baby. Well, stress does play a component in fertility, but that's not the only reason you're not getting pregnant. This is the reason you do need to see a fertility specialist, because we just talked about the many physiologic reasons that people don't get pregnant. Besides, if relaxing fixed the stress, then everyone would just need a bottle of wine and a beach vacation and you would get pregnant. So it's more than just stress. You want to go see your fertility specialist and get some answers. So just remember, you're not alone in this. I'm here to answer your questions and we will talk at the next episode.
Pioneer.